Let's take a deep dive into Scripture with Father John Wargle and Danny Gallagher. During each episode, we'll be sharing our insights about the Bible passages presented on a related post on Father John's website, ancienthopes.org. To find the post we're discussing, go to the ancienthopes.org website and then find the Deep Dive into Scripture link at the top of the page. Our discussions on this show will follow the posts listed on that page. Here are your hosts for our deep dive into Scripture today, Danny and Father John. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another Deep Dive into Scripture podcast. We're diving deep today. I'm Danny Gallagher, back again with Father John Wargle. Father John, welcome back.
Greetings, Danny.
What are we going to talk about today?
Oh, we get to talk about days 2 and 5 of the creation story in Genesis 1.
Okay, great.
Yeah. I mean, we covered last week days 1 and 4, where God separated in day 1, light from darkness. And then in day 4, the celestial bodies that he created.
Mm-hmm.
This week, we're going to hit the verse, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters. That's day 2, and then paralleling that in day 5, let the waters bring forth creatures.
Abundance of creatures.
Yeah, right. So we're talking about watery things here today.
Okay, sounds good. Can't wait.
Yeah.
So let's go for it. So the connection continues between days 1, 2, 3 and 4, 5, 6, where God seems to create things, and by creating things, he does separations.
Perfect.
Actually.
Yeah, you're a good student.
Yep, thank you. And then he, on the next day, well, then he names things.
Right.
I sort of noticed that. And then he fills the space
that
he created.
Okay, Tohu is formlessness, and Vohu is giving form, form to the formlessness.
Yeah. Okay, good. All right, so here we go. So we're going to talk about day 2.
Okay, well, let's talk about this. It is said that in day 2, God speaks into existence, rakia in the Hebrew. Okay, we mentioned this, I think, in one of our earlier podcasts.
I think so.
It's kind of like the image of a very solid thing. It's kind of like beaten out like a bowl.
This is the bowl, yes.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. And so this is understood to be a roof, okay? Because remember, we're talking about God erecting a temple.
Yep, sure.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the roof, as we shall see a little bit later in the flood, has windows.
Okay.
And they're opened, and the waters from above can come through and inundate the earth, right? So
like
that's
rain.
What's going on there. And then this rakia is understood to be set on the pillars of the earth. And the pillars of the earth are the mountains.
Ah.
Okay. So you see what's being built here.
Okay.
A house. Now, you might say, or people might say, well, this, these metaphors, they seem primitive. They seem backward, right? Do they really believe this? Well, there may have been some who actually literally took this to be the way it is. But I don't think that the ancients were not all that. They're pretty smart people, okay? They know metaphors, and you don't have to believe this literally, and they knew that, okay? Again, they're thinking about how we are to experience creation, and we experience it as a great house.
A temple.
Yeah, a great temple for us to live with God in.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole thing, right? Okay, now, with this metaphor of a rakia, we have to understand a Hebrew word, and that is, in the beginning, God created the heavens, shamayim.
Okay.
And the earth. Can you say shamayim?
Shamayim.
Yeah, that's right. You got it, right? Yeah. And shamayim is a dual. Do you know what a dual is? You probably don't.
Two meanings?
Because in English, we have only singulars and plurals. So we have one of one thing, and it's a singular.
Okay.
Like a cat. Mm-hmm. That's singular. And then we have the plural, when you put an S on it, cats.
A herd. No, just kidding. Sorry.
Well, herd, yeah, right. Okay. So, yeah, right.
Cats.
So, yeah, cats. Plural. But there's no way to say two cats unless we put the number two in front of that. Two cats. Right. Right? Mm-hmm. Well, in the Hebrew, you don't have to use the number. All you have to do is put an ending on it, which is called a dual, which is two.
Oh,
so you can put, you can say two cats, two dogs, two elephants, whatever, you know, by putting this ending on it, and it's the ayam ending, shamayim.
Okay.
So they understood shamayim. The heavens to be in a dual sort of thing. Okay. You have the heavens above this dome and you have the heavens below. And up on the dome and above is the stars. We talked about that last time.
Yep.
They're immovable and what have you. Underneath the dome, you've got the atmosphere that we have. Okay. So they understood the heavens to be in two parts.
Okay.
Okay.
So something that's farther away.
Yeah. Immovable. And we're... Yeah, and that the duals also understood in that there is the physical heavens that we see, but there's also the spiritual heavens, which the stars represent.
Oh, okay.
And the stars represent angels and angelic hosts. So when they look out in the starry sky, they saw stars, right?
That's what they're thinking.
Did, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But they also knew that the spiritual realm, that becomes an emblem, the spiritual realm that is unseen, that was made with the earth and cannot be understood apart from the earth because the physical and the spiritual were together.
Right,
okay.
Sure.
Right. Okay, so this dome, at least in the physical sense, separates the heavens above from the heavens below. Dual. You got that?
Okay.
Okay, good. So in that's the sky. Okay, so now let's go to day five. That's kind of interesting, I think, because he makes the fish, all these warming things that are in, you know. And then on the side, it says he made a tananim. The tananim.
Tananim.
Yeah, tananim. And these were the sea monsters.
Oh, great. Had to make those.
We humans are really fascinated with sea monsters, aren't we?
I mean, sure, yeah.
Have you ever seen one, Danny, outside, out in the ocean or anything?
Well, I've seen pictures of sea creatures that certainly look like monsters.
Well, they do look scary, don't they?
Yeah, sure do. And a friend of mine just was on a boat in Ocean City that caught a 900-pound tuna. And won a contest in Ocean City for that. So that 900, that is a gigantic fish.
I mean, did he give you some of the tuna for not even in a freezer?
No. I wish, but no.
Well, but you know, the ancients thought that these things were very, you know, like we do. We're very much into the mystery of these monsters like octopi. Giant squids,
sure, yeah,
and giant whales. You know, they would have been talking about this, and they would understood it in a literal sense, but they would also understand it in a metaphorical or symbolic sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because
and would they relate it then to their spirituality? Because they're
they seem to combine
those things. Nothing is removed from their spiritual or religious side.
Right, right, right. And that's the whole point of metaphor. It's not just a physical thing. You know, it's moderns. We look at it just as a material thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it came to represent something after the fall. These things were made, and they were made good.
Right,
even
yeah.
though these monsters are scary and they could eat you up if they had the chance, there's danger. Okay, there's this danger everywhere. But they come to take on moral meaning,
okay?
Like the watery deep becomes a metaphor for death.
Okay.
And a sea creature is the personification of death and sin. You see, we all...
Or evil. Evil?
Or evil, yeah. Uh-huh. Right. Now, we all think in our turn, in our world, you know, evil in the abstract.
Sure, yeah.
We talk about it all the time. We'll use the word evil, right? But... it hardly ever has a real face. We know it's out there, but we can't see it so easily.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to the Deep Dive into Scripture radio show and podcast with your hosts, Danny Gallagher and Father John Wargle. The text that we're discussing can be found on the AncientHopes.org website, and then select the Deep Dive into Scripture link at the top of that page. Let's get back to our show with Danny and Father John.
Yep. We talk about it all the time. We'll use the word evil, right? But it hardly ever has a real face. We know what's out there, but we can't see it so easily.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to put a face on it. And that's the monster, okay?
Sure, yeah.
So this sea monster becomes the death monster. The watery deep was understood to go underneath the earth. And if there's an earthquake, there it causes that. Every grave has is sort of an entrance into this place called Sheol. And it's all associated with death, the watery deep, and all that sort of thing. Mm. Okay.
And darkness.
So every culture has a face for evil. And in the Bible, it really is this sea creature that takes on snaky form in Isaiah. It's a hybrid. We'll talk about hybrids in a little bit. In the medieval world, you had the dragon, right?
Sure, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What do you know about dragons? Can you think of some things you know about dragons?
Well, fire.
Breathing fire.
Flying.
Flying.
A lot of death and destruction when they are unhappy.
Yeah, they're chaos creatures.
Yes.
Okay, that's what they do.
Yeah, right. Cause chaos. Yeah.
Right, right. And they're almost always associated with gold, like Smaug.
True, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Remember Smaug?
Yep, yep.
Now, he doesn't spend any of the money, but he knows every single coin and where every single coin is. And if something's missing, he knows.
Sure, the Hobbit, yeah.
Yeah, right, right. And so associated with money, associated with devouring, eating people, high bread. And also, it's not this way in the Hobbit and Tolkien, but in the medieval world, it's always associated with beautiful women.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so these things are all metaphorical to help us understand the evil, because with all these things they're associated with, bad things can happen, you know, with gold and greed. Beautiful women, you know.
Sure, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the devouring and, you know, that sort of thing. So, Danny, you know, the great image of evil in our culture right now, basically the scariest of all monsters, the most evil monster you can think of is what?
Satan.
Well, you know, that's very interesting you should say that, but Satan has to have a face. When you say Satan, what do you think of? You think of a onesie and a red suit and a pitchfork and a tail?
No, more like a snake. Reptilian
that's good.
Creature.
That's good. Right, right, right. Yeah, and he's a snaky creature, right? In our culture, the monster that is most evil is the vampire.
Ah, sure, of course, yeah.
Okay.
I mean,
It wasn't Frankenstein's fault that he got Abby Normal's brain.
Right.
Right.
Thank you.
<Yeah. laughs> And a creature of the dark lagoon. If you left him in a dark lagoon, he would have been fine. Same thing with Godzilla, you know. So it's Dracula.
Yeah.
And if you look at all the things associated with him, it's what? He's associated with old money. Right.
Yeah.
Comes from Transylvania.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Always has a big castle.
Always has a big castle and money. That's right.
It's always in the dark.
He's always
can't
in the
come
dark.
Out in the daytime.
That's right.
Sun
that's
will
right.
kill him.
That's exactly. Mm-hmm. That's right. He's also a hybrid. He can become bat and man or wolf or whatever that sort of thing, you know. And then, he has to be invited.
Okay, yes,
so all
true,
these things are true about Satan. You know, he can't force himself on you, but he becomes our face for evil. And so, therefore, every culture has to have something very tangible. So, unfortunately, because we don't teach the scriptures as they are, like people are just bored to tears with a lot of homilies, you know, God help that maybe my minor
we'll pray for
like
you
that.
About
right.
that. Yeah.
And where you don't really deal with these little real life issues, where do they go? To church. They go to church, to the cinema. Okay. Because everybody knows on some level that they've seen these monsters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In their dreams, for sure.
Yeah, and we know what it means to someone to be sucking the life out of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we in a lot of different ways.
And we could also suck the life of other people. So people go to scary movies to theologize and to be able to face the monsters that they can't see during the day, but they feel the presence.
Ah, yeah, sure.
Okay.
Makes sense.
So these metaphors are so important to us. And in our sophistication, you might say, well, these metaphors are so backward and so primitive. How can you believe all sort of thing? But C.S. Lewis said, he has a really good chapter in some book called Horrid Red Things, which, you know, is a metaphor that he is talking about. All language is metaphorical, and you can't really communicate anything without metaphors. And we cannot get away from them. Let me just read something here, because we're talking cosmology. Remember we talked about cosmology last time?
Sure,
And what we're building here is a cosmology. This is really good. This quote comes from the discarded image. It's a good thing, okay? He says this: the really important difference is that the medieval universe, while unimaginably large, was also unambiguously finite. And the same can be same true for the Hebrew, okay?
Okay.
To look out on a night sky with modern eyes is like looking out over a sea that fades away into the mist, or looking about one in a trackless forest, trees forever and no horizon. To look up at the towering medieval universe is much like looking at a great building. And that's what we're doing. Medieval got it right out of the Old Testament. In modern, that is, evolutionary thought, man stands at the top of a stair whose feet is lost in obscurity. In this medieval model, or I'd say Old Testament model, he stands at the bottom of a stair whose top is invisible with light.
Oh.
So it's really, really important, the ability to live in mystery, the mystery of what God is constructing here. And of course, light is coming down from the Shemayim, the heavens.
From the heavens.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So these metaphors are so important for us. We shouldn't look at them as being rustic, but they're very important for us to understand. So, Danny, where are we with all this? Are you doing okay?
Yeah, doing okay. I feel a little bit overwhelmed, but I'm trying to focus and center on the fact that we're still really talking about this way that the writers, the authors of Genesis, are developing the temple here.
Right.
By putting these two sets of days, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And so what we've just done is talked about days 2 and 5 and the dome, right? And the sea and the creation of filling the void of the sea, whatever God put in the sea.
And what does that do for you, Danny? I mean, what does that do for you, your cosmology, the way you look at the world? I mean,
well, it does help me to understand my connection to God a little bit more, and the way that things were created for me as a human person, and this whole idea of the temple being a place where I'm going to live with God. So the sea and the skies, you know, it just gives me a better feeling for when I look at the sea and I look at the sky, to understand it in relationship to the Genesis story, I guess, is really
right. And what I'm hearing between the lines is that you're getting the fact that it's a hospitable place, even though it's full of danger.
Sure, yeah. The world.
Okay, it's a very dangerous place. Still, it's hospitable. And for the ancient mind, they knew it was big, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the bigger the world becomes, or seems to the ancient mind, the bigger God gets.
Ah, sure.
In our culture,
it's the opposite.
It's the opposite. Yeah,
right.
The bigger the world and the universe, like Carl Sagan, you know, and all this stuff.
Billions and billions.
Yeah, his assumption is the bigger the universe is as we discover it, the concept of God gets smaller and smaller until he disappears to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And then where does that leave humanity?
Yeah, without God.
yeah, on top of that ladder, like C.S. Lewis, with his feet is lost in the midst.
Uh-huh.
And you're on top of a ladder in a cloud, and it's just a terrifying place.
Sure.
I don't want to live there.
Yeah, that doesn't sound hospitable. But the bottom line is that at the end of it all, God says, and it was good.
That's right.
So yeah. Seems like that's the hospitable, that's the good place. That's the good place to live.
Yeah. Good.
Okay, good. So that's days 2 and 5, and we're going to move on to days 3 and 6 in the next show podcast.
Okay, God bless you. Thank you.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for listening. Please go to ancienthopes.org and the Deep Dive into Scripture link on that page for related text. You can find more episodes of this show on the WSJF podcast server or on the Apple and Spotify podcast services. See you next time when we take another Deep Dive into Scripture. Don't forget this week to open that Bible and dive right in.